The Situation Room, that windowless, low-ceiling space beneath the White House, has witnessed America's most consequential decisions for over six decades. Created by Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs disaster revealed shocking communication failures, this nerve center has evolved from a simple pig pen into the heart of presidential decision-making. What makes this space extraordinary isn't its physical attributes, but the human drama that unfolds within. Here, presidents face their most harrowing choices, revealing their character under pressure. Some rise magnificently to challenges, while others falter. Through the stories of those who served there, we glimpse how history's pivotal moments unfold, not in grand theaters, but in cramped rooms where leaders must make impossible choices with limited information and the weight of the world on their shoulders. Kennedy's creation of the Situation Room stemmed from humiliation. After the Bay of Pigs disaster, 87 days into his presidency, Kennedy was furious about primitive communication systems that had him playing telephone with military commanders. The voracious reader, capable of consuming 1,200 words per minute, wanted direct access to raw intelligence rather than filtered summaries. Within 2 weeks of the failed invasion, Kennedy ordered National Security Advisor McGeorge Bundy to create a permanent crisis center, giving naval aides just 14 days to build it. Unlike temporary war rooms of previous administrations, Kennedy established what would become a permanent fixture in presidential decision-making. The Situation Room proved its worth during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Though Kennedy didn't hold his XCOM meetings there, he frequently visited to read newswire reports. Its connection to the CIA's Foreign Broadcast Information Service delivered the crisis's biggest breakthrough, detecting Khrushchev's decision to remove missiles from a Radio Moscow broadcast before diplomatic channels could. During Kennedy's assassination, duty officer Oliver Hallett used the room to relay increasingly grim updates to cabinet members flying over the Pacific, culminating in the devastating message, "The president is dead." The Vietnam War highlighted stark presidential leadership contrasts. Johnson was intensely hands-on, demanding constant casualty updates regardless of hour. "You let me know if we lose any," he insisted, "whatever time of night it is." While confident domestically, Johnson was deeply affected by the war's human toll. Nixon rarely entered the Situation Room, delegating crisis management to Kissinger. This became dangerous during the 1973 Yom Kippur War when Nixon, incapacitated by scotch, sleeping pills, and depression, was effectively absent as advisors navigated potential Soviet conflict. When Brezhnev threatened unilateral action, Kissinger raised America's military readiness to DEFCON 3 without meaningful presidential input. Unbeknownst to Kissinger, Brezhnev was similarly compromised, secluded at his dacha in an alcohol and pill-fueled decline. This nuclear standoff, with neither leader fully in command, demonstrates global security's vulnerability to human frailty. When Cambodian forces seized the SS Mayaguez in May 1975, President Ford faced a critical choice about potential American hostages. Despite Kissinger advocating aggression, Ford ordered restraint. Use riot control agents or other methods, but do not attack it. His caution proved correct. The boat carried all 39 American crew members. In March 1982, Reagan participated in a classified nuclear war exercise that profoundly affected him as he watched simulated Soviet warheads destroy Washington. This experience made him realize this is not just some abstraction, strengthening his resolve to eliminate nuclear threats. For Bush Sr., the Gulf War demonstrated decisive leadership. When General Schwarzkopf's initial plan failed to impress Bush and Scowcroft, Bush later responded to military requirements by simply telling Dick Cheney, "You've got it. Let me know if you need more," before walking out, instantly doubling troop numbers to 500,000. These moments reveal how presidents process information, weigh options, and make decisions that define their legacies within this small room. The Situation Room operates 24/7, with staff deciding when to wake the president. Clinton's sit room director Jim Reed explained, "Almost every night there's something you can wake somebody up over. You hate to bother people when you don't have answers to all the obvious questions." Presidential communication requires elaborate choreography that Elliot Powell compared to the Bolshoi Ballet. Both sides ensure their leader won't wait, with Dave Roddy noting, "Our president waits for nobody." When Putin made Obama wait, the president calmly played words with friends on his iPad, telling director Larry Pfeiffer he enjoyed these moments to chill. Head of state calls aren't recorded. Instead, three staffers type notes during conversations to create memcons, comparing notes afterward and using rock, paper, scissors to determine who would compile the final document. The Situation Room reveals president's humanity. Bush Sr. once asked politely, "This is the president, may I come in?" The Bush family's informality, Barbara appearing in sweats with grandchildren and dogs, contrasted with the Reagan era's formality. On September 11, 2001, Situation Room staff refused evacuation orders to maintain operations. Off-duty personnel like Bob Schubert navigated police checkpoints to join them. Frank Miller prepared a dead list with names and social security numbers in case of attack. Even Navy mess staff remained, simply stating, "You guys are going to need to eat." Situation Room Director Deborah Luer was with President Bush in Sarasota. After briefing Chief of Staff Andrew Card about the first plane crash, she saw the television. When the second plane hit, Rob Hargis immediately declared, "We are under attack." Breaking protocol, Luer interrupted the president's classroom visit to inform Card. The staff maintained remarkable composure throughout the crisis. "We rolled right into coordination," Hargis recalled. "There was zero panic." When Luer returned that evening, she found her entire team had stayed despite evacuation orders. "Just as the firefighters stayed, so did my people stay." This dedication was equally evident during the Bin Laden raid. The iconic Situation Room photo occurred spontaneously as people gathered in a smaller room where General Webb had direct links to Admiral McRaven and drone footage. During the operation, the normally talkative room fell silent, history unfolding before their eyes. The renovated Situation Room complex blends tradition with technology. Once cramped spaces now feature digital advancements, floating ceiling tiles, blue lighting, and wall-mounted screens. Ethically sourced mahogany and a granite presidential seal preserve historical elements, while modular components allow future upgrades without complete shutdowns. What truly powers the Situation Room is extraordinary trust, the foundation Obama's team built before the Bin Laden raid, the respect Scowcroft commanded as an honest broker, and the duty officers who remained at their posts on 9/11 despite mortal danger. This trust enables healthy debate that counteracts the groupthink plaguing autocracies. Hidden beneath fabric covering a concrete pillar are dozens of signatures from officers who served during renovation. Unsung heroes preserved yet concealed, embodying the spirit of service that has defined this space for decades. The Situation Room reminds us that history is made by humans making difficult choices under pressure. In this space beneath the White House, presidents reveal their true character and ordinary Americans rise to extraordinary challenges, a testament to leadership, courage, and our capacity to face history's most daunting moments.